I think if we're honest with ourselves, it's easy to see things in our lives that we wish were different than what they were. Things that are difficult for us to deal with. All of them, I think each of us have different things in general, but we have difficult times. And we're living in difficult times. Difficult to be a Christian, difficult to keep God's laws and God's ways, difficult to fight some of the influences in society. We see things that we would like to be different and see that they're not. In our country, unemployment is still high. The economy is still not that good. People are still struggling. Many people are still struggling to make ends meet, to put food on the table, a house, roof over their heads and their families' heads. And it seems like that as we go along, sickness and disease has more of a hold on more people. We've commented before, and we talked about cancer today, but how many more people seem to be struck with that than there used to be. And a lot of evidence that diseases are getting a stronger hold on us for a number of reasons. And we see morality declining, obedience to God's laws declining everywhere. We see greed and corruption in almost every aspect of our public life and business life. It's a rarity to work for a company and work for an owner who actually treats their employees fairly, decently, with respect. When you talk to people, and that's not just church people, not just Christians, you talk to people on the street, people that you get to know from work, almost everybody recognizes that things have to change. Something needs to become. Something needs to happen. Something needs to be different. We have politicians who promise that if you elect them, they will change things. And then, in the end, they really don't. It's more of the same. But for us, as Christians, the idea of change, the idea that things have to change, that we have to change, really shouldn't be a foreign concept. It shouldn't be something that you've never thought about until you sat and listened to this message. It's something we're familiar with. You know, we come to church every week and we hear messages that are generally encouraging us in some way or another to change. Maybe it's to deepen your understanding of a subject. Maybe it's to change an aspect of your life. Maybe it's to change how you relate to other people. But we hear that regularly at Sabbath services. We go to the Feast of Tabernacles and we celebrate an understanding that there is going to be a time when things are going to change. And that we do have that to look forward to. We go to the church activities, things like the Winter Family Weekend or different seminars that are put on, and we see how things could be. We see how things could be. The change, we see change that we would like to make. And we look at ourselves and we see that, if we're honest, that there are things that need to change. Each and every one of us, we know that there's things that we need to change. And what I'd like to have you think about a little bit is what do you think about? How often do you think about that? How often do you look at yourself in the mirror and say, I need to change? And then beyond that, how often do you actually make those changes? How often are you successful in making those changes? Can you go, you look back at yourself a year after, and you made a commitment. Whether it's during the days of unleavened bread and looking up toward the Passover, which is a time where many, many times we do make commitments to make changes, and then we come the next year to that season. How often have we truly been successful? I know many times in my life I've not been successful, not really made the change completely. Maybe I've made some improvements. but it's not complete. And that's the sad part about being a Christian, is a lot of times we don't really have the success we'd like. We don't get there. You know, we still struggle with the things that we've struggled with for many, many, many years. And we find ourselves falling back into old habits, because those are easier. Those are comfortable in some ways. They're the things that they're a habit, so it's what we naturally do if we don't change ourselves. Why aren't we more successful more often? Why doesn't it happen more often than it does? I think many times, it's because we don't think about, we don't know what we really need to do to be successful. We don't know all that it takes. Because just making a decision, I'm going to change something, generally doesn't lead you to success. There are steps and processes and things that you need to do and commit to be successful in anything, in any effort that you do. And yet, very rarely, I think, if we look at our lives, do we really even think about a plan of attack, make a plan of how we're going to be successful in any area. There have been, around the Church of God, for 50 or 60 years, what were called laws of success. Things that we needed to do and think about if we were going to be successful in any area of our life. And whether you call them laws or requirements or steps, it really doesn't matter. But they're valid. They work. They lead to success, give us a much greater chance of success than if we don't apply them, don't know them. So what we're going to do today is look at those seven laws, those seven requirements. Those of you that have been around a long time, see if you can write them all down on your notebook. See how many of them you can get. Maybe, because sometimes I think it's easy to say, oh, the seven laws of success. How many times did I read that booklet? How many times have I thought about those? And think that you really don't need to pay a whole lot of attention anymore. And yet I think that the lack of success in our lives shows us that we need to pay attention. That it doesn't matter whether we knew them, we know them. If we aren't applying them, we still aren't going to be successful. So that's what we're going to do today, is look at these seven laws, these seven requirements, and hopefully give us a leg up heading into the spring holy days in becoming more successful in the things that we're trying to change about ourselves and change about our lives. So the first law, the first requirement, is that success requires setting a right goal. You have to set a goal to be successful. And a goal isn't just, I'm not going to do this. Generally, negative goals don't help you as much. Setting a positive goal of, this is what I'm going to do, action that you're actually going to accomplish rather than something you're not going to do, has more of a chance of working for you. So many people live their lives reacting to the things that happen to them. And we all do that at different times, just reacting to whatever comes our way, not really having a plan, living according to any kind of a plan. A lot of times they'll say, I was a victim of circumstances. And sometimes that happens. Time and chance does happen to all people. But a lot of times, time and chance becomes something that you just really weren't working toward a goal, and so things happened without any plan. So you have to set a right goal. You have to choose to do something different than what you're doing and set a goal that you're going to work toward. It has to be a goal that will eventually accomplish what you want it to accomplish, but it also has to accomplish it in the right way. You could set a goal of having $1 million by the time you're 40 years old. Now, if you worked hard and you had the right opportunities and that actually happened, and you didn't let wealth get in the way of being a true Christian, sure, maybe you could say that is the right goal. Going out and robbing banks to get your $1 million by the time you're 40 wouldn't be the right way to accomplish that goal. With any goal, there is a right and wrong way to achieve it, to accomplish it. But I'd like to just tell you, give you a few aspects, a few qualities when you think about choosing a goal that maybe will help you choose one that is actually right. It does have to be something that excites you. A good goal is going to excite you. You're going to have some energy, some enthusiasm about actually working to accomplish it. It certainly has to be worthwhile, worth the effort and worth the sacrifice that you're going to make. So again, I'm not going to use white Kleenex in my house. Isn't a goal that's worth worrying about. Make it something worthwhile. Because if you're going to do this, it's going to require sacrifice, and it's going to require some pain. You're changing. Pain change can be painful. And one other thing I have written down, and I'm sure if you read the hundreds of thousands of books on being successful and setting goals, they would have a whole much longer list. But is that the goal has to be worth it. And maybe I've said maybe this is the same thing I'm saying differently, but it has to be worth it. It has to be something that really you can see the benefits in your life. You can see the benefits for those you love, the benefits for your family. I'd like to look at an example. One example of someone setting a goal in 1 Kings chapter 5. Solomon is who we're going to be reading about, and he set a goal for himself. We'll begin reading in verse 1 of 1 Kings chapter 5. Now Hiram, king of Tyre, sent his servants to Solomon, because he heard that they had anointed him king in place of his father, for Hiram had always loved David. Then Solomon sent to Hiram, saying, "You know how my father David could not build a house for the name of the Lord his God because of the wars which were fought against him on every side, until the Lord put his foes under the soles of his feet?" Should be a question mark. "But now the Lord, my God, has given me rest on every side. There is neither an adversary nor evil occurrence. And behold, I propose to build a house for the name of the Lord, my God, as the Lord spoke to my father David, saying, 'Your son, whom I will set on your throne in your place, he shall build the house for my name.'" Solomon set a goal. "I'm going to build the temple of God. I'm going to build a tabernacle, a dwelling place for God. I'm going to fulfill one of my father's desires that he wasn't able to do." So you can see, and it certainly wasn't a little thing. Building a house, the house of God, building God's temple, wasn't a small goal, wasn't an easy thing. But he set that goal. And we'll just read a few passages related to this story. We'll jump to chapter 6. And we'll read verses 37 and 38. "In the fourth year, the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid, in the month of Ziv. And in the 11th year, in the month of Bul, which is the 8th month, the house was finished in all of its details and according to all of its plans." So he was 7 years in building it. Some goals don't happen in a month or a week or a few days or even a year. Some goals, worthwhile goals, are going to take longer. And that creates a challenge. That's the reason why knowing these laws of success and following them can actually help us to, on long-term goals like that, to get to the end and actually make it without giving up. 7 years. And realistically, that was just doing the building. They still hadn't furnished it. They still hadn't put all the stuff inside of it. That was just to make the building itself. Chapter 7, we'll read beginning in verse 51, which I think is the last verse of that chapter. So all the work that King Solomon had done for the house of the Lord was finished, and Solomon brought in the things which his father David had dedicated, the silver and the gold and the furnishings, and he put them in the treasuries of the house of the Lord. And then in verse 1 of chapter 8, Solomon assembled the elders of Israel and all of the heads of the tribes, the chief fathers of the children of Israel, to King Solomon in Jerusalem, that they might bring up the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord from the city of David, which was in Zion. He's almost there, right? He's got the house furnished. He's brought everything in. The last step of that is the last thing he's going to do is bring the Ark of the Covenant into this permanent house that he's built in God's name to honor God. And then we'll skip down to verse 10 of chapter 8. And it came to pass, when the priests came out of the holy place, that the cloud filled the house of the Lord, so that the priests could not continue ministering because of the cloud. For the glory of the Lord filled the house of the Lord. That's when Solomon knew that he had completed his goal. That's when he knew that it was actually complete. When he saw that God accepted the house, the temple. He needed to take it all the way to the end, to take that goal all the way to the end. Because he really wasn't successful. He built that house. He furnished it. He did everything he could. But he really didn't know whether he was going to be a success until that last step. And it's just a lesson for us that if you're going to try to change, if you're going to try to do something, if you're going to set that goal, follow it through all the way to the end. Don't accept, I guess, partial success. Take it to the end. Take it all the way until you know. So an example, this is an example that I wanted to show you of setting a right goal following through. It fills all those qualities that we've talked about what a right goal should be. The second law, the second step toward being successful is getting an education or preparing yourself, whichever you like, however you'd like to word that. Doing the proper preparation, getting the right education. Because true success really doesn't just drop in our lap. It takes work. It isn't something where you can just rely on your instinct to make all the right decisions along the way. Many times, and if we're talking about changes in our Christian life, or we're talking about changes in our secular life, if you want to call it that. I don't know if you can separate that with a Christian. Maybe that's not a good example. We have to educate ourselves. If you're looking at Passover, if you're looking toward the days of unleavened bread, and there are changes you want to make, there is education that you should get, study you should do, so that you're prepared and you know what you need to do. You have all of the information available to you to reach your goal. And education involves an education in moral law, not just the laws of the land, not just physics, physical laws, but understanding God's law. That's part of getting the right education for anything. The ability to learn and reason is something that God only gave to mankind. And I want to clarify that because I know you can train a dog to do tricks. But when I'm talking, that's almost still at an instinctual level. There's a reward, so they do it so they can get their reward. The way that mankind can learn, the way that mankind can reason, is a gift that God has given us that He hasn't given to any other part of the physical creation. And being able to do that, to think and reason, is a God-level activity, I'd call it. Something that God does. And something that, as sons and daughters of God, He's given us the ability to do. And so many times we really don't take advantage of what God's given us. We almost act by instinct like the animals do. God expects us to learn. God expects us to reason. When you talk about this about this being a God-level activity, I wanted to take us to Hebrews chapter 5 and read something that I think is interesting related to this. In Hebrews chapter 5, we'll begin reading in verse 5. So also Christ did not glorify Himself to become high priest, but it was He who said to Him, God who said to Christ, You are My Son, today I have begotten You. And He also said in another place, You are a priest forever according to the order of Melchizedek. In verse 7, who in the days of His flesh, when He'd offered up, talking about Christ, when He'd offered up prayers and supplications with vehement cries and tears to Him who was able to save Him from death, and was heard because of His godly fear. Though He was a son, though Christ was God, the Son of God, yet He learned obedience by the things which He suffered. What I want to point out is what it says about Christ right there. It said that Christ learned. Christ learned obedience through the things that He suffered. Christ came to this earth to learn what it was like, part of the reason, to learn what it was like to be a human and to suffer. Because as God, He didn't know what that really was like. He didn't understand that. To be our mediator, He needed to be able to stand in our place. He needed to be able to stand before God and say, I understand what this person is going through. But the point I want to bring out is even God, Christ as the Son of God, still learns, still has the capacity to learn. And I don't believe that that ever ends. Now, can I point to a scripture in the Bible that says that exact, that word for word? No. But we have indications that Christ still needed to learn. I think because we have free moral agency, God learns a little bit about us every time we make a choice. So education is a good thing. Education is something that we are going to have to have as a part of our life, I believe, for eternity. And I think you can find some support for that in the Bible. So we shouldn't look at education as a bad thing. And if we're going to be successful, we have to learn about the thing we're trying to do. Whatever that is, whatever goal you've set, you have to learn about it. Relying on our own understanding of things probably won't lead to success because it hasn't led to success up to this point. Or you wouldn't have chosen the goal that you've chosen. Now, education does come in many different forms. Experience is certainly a form of education. Trying something and seeing that it doesn't work or seeing that it does work is a form of education. Unfortunately, for many adults, that's kind of the only education that you get. If you don't read, if you don't study, if you don't watch, and all you do is learn by what happens to you, whether it turned out good or bad, you're limiting your educational opportunities. You're limiting your chances for success. You certainly can learn from books. You can learn about many things from books. You can also learn by having a mentor, finding someone who's experienced in whatever it is you're trying to do, and talking to them, learning from them, asking them what they had to do. I've always thought that it was such a great example of how God wanted people to learn from each other in the Old Testament. You know, we talk about slavery as being such a horrible thing, and it is the way it became in this country. But God's laws for Israel, if you were an idiot with your money and you couldn't keep it and you couldn't do anything with it and you lost everything that you had because you were kind of stupid about money, God said, I'm going to have you go work for, be a slave for, somebody who knows how to handle their money, somebody who's successful, and I expect him to teach you and show you how to be good with money. So that when this is done, you can be successful. You're not going to be living in the gutters again because you were stupid with your money again. Being humble enough to recognize that someone else knows more about a specific subject than you do, going to them and asking them to help you can be difficult sometimes. Sometimes probably more difficult if we know each other than if you don't know someone. Which is kind of backwards, I think, of the way it should be within God's church especially. But a lot of times it is. Don't be afraid to find a mentor to help you achieve your goals. So education is a requirement for success. The third requirement is you need good health. You need good health. Success isn't easy. It requires strength and stamina. Physical, mental, emotional. It requires at different times all those things. And when we're sick, we don't have those things. If our body is weak, we don't have those things. It's much more difficult to overcome when you're weak. When you're sick, that tends to be your focus is on the sickness. That doesn't mean that you can't succeed if you have health problems, but it means doing all we can now to maintain good health and keep our health also is going to contribute to our success. Make it better, make it easier. Take one of those roadblocks away from us. God established laws of things that we should eat and things that we shouldn't eat. And I'm not going to go through the laws of clean and unclean meats. That's probably a different sermon, actually. But we're all aware of those things. And I really don't think that I need to cajole you to not eat a bunch of unclean meat. But what I do want you to do when we're talking about maintaining a good health is think what I would call the spiritual application of that law rather than just the physical application of that law. The reason there are animals that we aren't supposed to eat is because they are poisoned, because their bodies aren't designed to pass poisons that are in the system out. But it collects in their meat. It collects in their meat. It collects in the things that we would eat and then poisons us. So God says, I don't want you to eat those animals because they're going to put poison in your bodies. The spiritual application for me of that law is looking at all of the things that we eat that are available to us that technically are clean food, but put poisons into our bodies. How much processed food should someone eat if you really want to maintain your health? How many chemicals should you put into your body if you really want to be a healthy person? And I'm certainly not one to say, everybody, buy a few acres of land, get your garden, we'll all get together and we'll get a cow and we'll grow it, grain-fed, no poison, no whatever in there. Because I think it's extreme in the society we live in. But we could all do a better job of being more selective You know, it isn't just the high fat that Big Mac puts in your body that's a bad thing for you. You know, and it's called fast food. It's convenient food. Sometimes we're all going to probably grab it. But if there's a huge difference between grabbing it once a week or once every couple of weeks and grabbing it every day or grabbing it a couple times a day. So again, the spiritual application of clean and unclean meats is looking at what poisons we put into our body in any way and limiting that if we want to be healthy. And what we eat isn't the only thing that contributes to our health. There are other things that do make a difference. Certainly getting enough sleep, which seems to be difficult in this society. But getting enough sleep, and I'm sorry, 4 hours a night, regardless of how well you do, which, and I don't get nearly enough sleep. That doesn't really matter. That still isn't enough sleep. Your body... We can all think we're superhuman, and we're the exception to the rule. But in the end, we really aren't. We're, you know, our body may be a little bit stronger and be able to resist the effects, but it still affects us. So getting enough sleep is important. Getting exercise, quality exercise, is important. You know, there are many of us that, you know, they spent most of their working life at a desk somewhere, or sitting down somewhere, and you're not getting enough. None of us are getting enough exercise. If we think that walking back and forth to our car at lunch and on the way home and getting to work is the exercise we get during the day. So exercise is very important. But so are things like cleanliness. We've read a lot of things over the years about how easy it is for your house to get polluted, the air in your house to get polluted. Your house can be too airtight where it doesn't breathe. And a lot of, even the carpets and the furniture can throw poisons into the air. But being clean, not having a lot of, dust and other things that can attract germs or allow germs to grow, that's all important. It's important in how healthy the environment that you live in can be. And beyond just sleep, another thing that we all have to think about, and it's hard again in this society, is getting rest and relaxation. Getting away from the things that are causing you stress. Getting away from the things that are, make your blood boil. And just temporarily, obviously you're going to live, you still are dealing with them, but getting a break, getting away from things. You know, I've known people that I've worked with that, I never take a vacation. I cash it in and I just keep on working. And then they retire and they die a year later because they basically have blown their body out. And that's, again, part of God's plan. We get these holy days. I don't know if you've ever thought about it that way, but we get these holy days that are rest and relaxation. That get us away, should at least get us away from all of the stresses that we deal with on a normal basis. Give us a chance to change our mind and our patterns and things. And I certainly believe God in His wisdom understood, and part of the reason that we are told to come together. And it's not just, it's fine, just meet in your house and you'll be fine. It's because God knew that we would need that. So those are important to health, and good health is important to our success. The fourth law of success is having drive, which is a little push in your back. That desire to keep going, even when things are difficult. That stubbornness, I think, is a good way to describe drive, of not giving up. Not allowing all those little things that can get in your way to actually make you stop. I came across a saying as I was preparing this message that I thought would be both funny and appropriate. So The saying was, even a dead fish can float downstream, but it takes a live fish to swim against the current. And then, of course, you have to ask yourself, how much of my life have I been the dead fish? Just going with the current, just floating along, whichever way is the normal and easy way. How much dead fish time has there been in our life, and is there right now, where we should be swimming against the current? You know, generally, we're going to find ourselves as Christians swimming against the current if we're going to be successful. You know, I think over the years, we've known people that are here and then disappear, are here and go then give up. And, you know, Christ has a lot of parables about people like that. But I think in a lot of ways, it's because they didn't have that drive. They didn't have that stubbornness. And it was easy for them to give up. They were the dead fish, content to just go with the current too much of the time, and they eventually got lost. They got separated from where they needed to be. Drive means doing something with a purpose. It's not just aimless activity. Doing something with a purpose. I'm still in Hebrews, so we're going to turn to chapter 12, and I want to read something beginning in chapter 12. We'll start there. Read something Paul said in Hebrews chapter 12, verse 1. He wrote, "Therefore we also, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us lay aside every weight and the sin which so easily ensnares us, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us." Let us run with endurance. He didn't say, stroll along, smell the flowers. He said, let's push ourselves. Let's be in it for the long haul. Let's run with endurance. And I think that's another definition you could write down for drive. Run with endurance. He said, you know, therefore we also, is how he began that verse. And he was pointing back to chapter 11. Because he had just talked about a number of, I guess you'd call them the fathers of the faithful. And it isn't just fathers. There's actually women in there as well. People who he looked back at at that time and saw that they had done things right. And things that we do the same, we still look to as those who did things right. And let's read a few of the things in chapter 11. We'll read beginning in verse 7. By faith, Noah, being divinely warned of things not yet seen, moved with godly fear, prepared an ark for the saving of his house, or of his household, by which he condemned the world and became heir of the righteousness, which is according to faith. Noah prepared an ark. This took decades to build. And we know from the story, he was mocked. His neighbors didn't say, "What a cool thing you're building there, Noah." Hebrews 11, chapter 7, or chapter 11, verse 7. They said, "You're an idiot. You're an idiot. What are you doing this? Why are you doing this?" And there may have been times, being human, where Noah said, "Why am I doing this?" But he didn't give up. There may have been times where he had to go a long way to get some of the supplies he needed to build a ship that big. It probably wasn't easy to put it all together. But he continued to push himself. He drove himself to accomplish his goal, which was create an ark to save my family and ultimately save mankind, which is a pretty worthy goal. He had drive. He had purpose. Verse 8, by faith Abraham obeyed when he was called to go out to the place which he would receive as an inheritance. And he went out, not knowing where he was going. Abraham moved his entire family from what was at that time probably one of the wealthiest nations, the most advanced nations in the world, probably a very comfortable life, to the boonies, to the wilderness, where it wasn't safe, where it wasn't easy, where it wasn't fun. But he had a bigger goal. And so he did it. And I guarantee you it wasn't easy. Verse 17, by faith Abraham, when he was tested, offered up Isaac. And he who had received the promises offered up his only begotten son. It wasn't easy. You know that that wasn't easy for Abraham to do, or to commit to doing. Obviously, he didn't do it in the end. But he pushed himself. He pushed himself because he knew it was the right thing to do. If you read the stories in chapter 11, I believe you will see drive in each one of these stories. People had to push themselves beyond what they were comfortable with to accomplish what they did, to do what they did. And there seems to be a tie between faithfulness, being faithful and having drive when you're talking about Christians. I can't say they're the same thing. I didn't spend enough time really thinking about those two relationships to tie them in as well as I'd like to, but there seems to be a relationship between them. We have to do something. Success means we do something. And that's really what drive is about, is doing something. Not waiting for someone else to do it, but doing it yourself. James 1:25, I'm not going to turn there, it's a familiar scripture. It says, it isn't the hearer of the word, but the doer who God honors. The doer. Ecclesiastes 9:10, whatever your hand finds to do, do it with all of your might. Drive yourself. Push yourself. The people that we find in the Bible who are successful, and the chapter of the faithful, I would say, were successful Christians. Didn't make excuses. Didn't blame problems on somebody else. They just kept pushing. And they applied the other laws of success, I'm sure. They're left for an example for us of what we can do as well if we follow these laws and if we follow their examples. Are you self-motivated? Do you have drive? And to what level? How often do you push yourself? How often do you resist the easy path and do something where you'd rather take it easy? You'd rather not deal with this right now. How often do you push yourself? How often do we push ourselves? So success requires drive, requires that you push yourself. The fifth law is one that it helps take care of the problems that we don't foresee. You know, a goal is setting up, is having a plan, setting a path, trying to create a path to the success that we want. Most of the time, even if we're following that path, something unforeseen happens. Something we hadn't counted on. Something we hadn't planned for. And if we don't know how to deal with that, that can stop our chances of success right in its tracks. The fifth law is resourcefulness. Finding a way around the roadblock that pops up. Finding a way to deal with Murphy's Law. Finding a way to deal with Satan when you're talking about us as a Christian, because he's the one throwing those roadblocks. He's the one saying, oh, you think you've got your goal, you think you're on your path, you think you've got this working pretty good. here's something you hadn't thought about before. I'll throw this at you and see how you deal with this. What do you do when you hit a bump? Do you throw your hands up in the air and say, well, I hadn't thought about that. That's making it way too hard. I guess I'm just going to give up. Or do you find a way around it, through it, over it, past it? Resourcefulness isn't something where I can say, well, this is how you always solve your problem. Because resourcefulness is creative thinking. It's looking at the problem and saying, what do I need to do? How can I get around this? Talking to other people. But there are some qualities that I think help us become more resourceful, and I'll share those with you. One of them is remaining calm. Remaining calm. Don't get excited. Don't get anxious. Don't get fearful. Remain calm. A lot of times that may mean getting on your knees when you're feeling fearful or worried or anxious and letting God and that connection with Him calm you. But remaining calm. Try to think about why you didn't see this roadblock. Why this blindsided you. And it may open up your understanding. You may be able to see how to deal with it. I mentioned talking to other people. I just had this happen to me and I don't know what to do about it. Any ideas, any thoughts? How can I get past this? Again, not leaning to your own understanding, such a foundational Christian principle, and yet I think we all do it more than we should. Try to look at it from a different perspective. And that may be, you may be able to do that. Sometimes you can do that yourself. That depends a lot on how your brain works. Some people are very good at, you're going along this way, the roadblock is over here, being able to kind of spin their perspective at 90 degrees and kind of look at it from a different angle, and you say, oh, that really isn't as big a deal as it looks like right now. I can do this, or I can deal with this, and I'll be able to get past this. Sometimes you need a friend to give you that perspective. But try to look at the problem from a different perspective. Because generally you get locked into, this is the only solution, this is the only way to solve this problem is what I see right here. And usually that it isn't. Usually it isn't. I found a definition of resourcefulness that I'll share with you as part of this, just because it gives you something to think about. They said resourcefulness is looking at all of the resources, looking at all of the resources available to you and finding a way to deal with the unexpected. Dealing with the unexpected. Remember Matthew 19:26, and you can just write that down because I think you're familiar with it. It says, with God all things are possible. If you have that faith that we read about, a few examples in Hebrews 11, there isn't a problem that we will face that can't be overcome. With God, all things are possible. We just have to remember that, and we don't. Too many times, we don't. You know, Christ talked about if you just had the faith equivalent to a grain of mustard seed, you'd be able to do great things. I haven't moved any mountains yet in my life. And not even any, not physical mountains, but anything that big, I guess I'd have to say. So resourcefulness. The fifth law of success is have resourcefulness. Be resourceful. The sixth law, and I think it's closely related to number four, is that you have to have perseverance. Perseverance. I think Mr. Armstrong called it stick-to-itiveness. You have to stand and fight, and you know, Paul said, run the race with endurance, or And I think there are some translations that actually say with perseverance. Run the race, whether you're running in sleet and snow and ice or 120 degree heat and no water. Keep running. And that's what Paul said. And that's one of those principles of success. Keep running. Perseverance is a commitment. It's a commitment you make to yourself primarily. You can certainly make it to God, make it to other people. But you make it to yourself that you're not going to give up. That you're not. You're just not going to give up. You're going to stick to it until you reach that goal. However long it takes, whatever it takes. You know, which goes back to how important it is to set a right goal in the first place. We know people who've persevered toward their goal, you know, that have done horrible things. Or they've gotten to the end of their goal and really wasn't worth anything. So all of these laws are tied together. But perseverance probably is closest to faith of any of these things we've talked about, because it is confidence. It's confidence that with God's help, with you applying all of these principles that are His principles, you can accomplish the goal. Confidence that you've chosen the right goal. Because if you start to question that, you're not going to persevere. You're not going to keep pushing yourself. You're not going to have drive. You're not going to try to learn. If you lose confidence in your goal, you're done. You're done. It's important that perseverance is important because, just like with Solomon building the temple and some of the other goals that we have, it's not going to happen overnight. Nothing good. What is it? There's the one saying, good things come to those who wait. Well, good things come, really good things take time. They take time. Things that are lasting. You know, we're spending, depending on when God started working with you, 20, 30, 40, 50, 60 years of our life with a goal of something that is very worthwhile, but takes a lot of time. It's going to take us a long time. Take us a lifetime to get to. So, that is the sixth step, perseverance. The seventh step, and we've touched on this one as I've talked about how to achieve these other steps, but it is important to have it listed as one of you, as a reminder. Because that seventh law is that we have to have constant contact with God. Constant guidance and help from God. And that's everything that we want to be successful in. Everything. God, having God involved makes it better. In any aspect of our life, anything we try to do, it always makes it better. One of the lessons of Solomon's life is that exact point. One of the things that he learned through all that he did was the point that we've just talked about. Solomon had a good relationship with God at the start of his ruling. You know, I think I've given a sermon here where we talked about God asking him, what do you want? And asking for wisdom to be a good king. But we also know that he lost his way, that wisdom disappeared, that he was foolish enough to think it was a good idea to have 700 wives and 300 concubines, that he was foolish enough, unwise enough, to try anything under the sun to see if it gave his life meaning, to see if it would make him happier, to make him feel more fulfilled. And he did, from what he says, tried everything. He lost his way. But in the end, he came back to the seventh point. And I'd like to turn there. I think you all know it anyway. But Ecclesiastes chapter 12. Ecclesiastes chapter 12. We'll read verses 13 and 14. Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. Fear God and keep his commandments, for this is man's all. For God will bring every work into judgment, including every secret thing, whether it's good and evil. Let's hear the conclusion of the matter. What's the most important? Fear God and keep his commandments. Have that right relationship with God. Respect God. Let him direct your life. I think if you dug up the book, the articles, the booklets that go back to when Mr. Armstrong originally wrote these things, I believe he talked about people he knew who had really done a great job of applying the first six principles, the first six laws, and doing that, we're successful on human standards. We're wealthy, powerful, seem to have it all figured out. But then that disappeared. They lost it. I know one of the big events in Mr. Armstrong's life that I think helped humble him was the Depression. And there were so many people that followed these six laws, and then the Depression came and they lost everything. And if you don't have the seventh law, if you don't have that relationship with God, if you're not letting him guide you toward establishing your goal, toward getting the education you need, toward all of these seven laws, you won't have a success that's lasting. You know, I think of Solomon when I think about this, and the example we read. He could have said, I was a success because I built the house. I built the house. But if the house had sat there empty, how long would he have felt that he had been successful? If God hadn't come, if God hadn't put his presence in that tabernacle, how long would Solomon have felt he was successful? Gets back to God being intimately involved in whatever we try to do. So we've talked about seven laws of success. A review for some of you, maybe the first time you've heard them, for others, maybe somewhere in between. They're valid principles. They're valid principles. They lead to true success. And true success is lasting. It's not momentary. True success benefits not just you, but it benefits others. True success doesn't just make you happy, but it pleases God. True success leads to change, something changing in your life, changing for the better. So we are all going to be, if we haven't already been, faced with the realization that something needs to change in our life as we approach the spring holy days. And I said thing because I'm gracious, because it's probably things as in multiples. We have time to work on those things. We have time to start applying these seven laws. And if we do that, we may not be completely successful in every one of those by the time the spring holy days roll along. But we'll be on the path. We'll have the right goal to shoot for. And we'll be much more prepared for the Passover and much more prepared for those spring holy days in a way that pleases God. We all want to succeed. I think that's a quality God looks for when he calls someone, is that desire to be something more than we are and to be willing to recognize that we're not what we should be. We all want to succeed. But God didn't just give us that want and not give us the tools to succeed. He's given us tools to succeed. We just have to learn them and remember them and use them. Like any tool, if it's just hanging on the wall, it's not really doing you much good. It's when you can put it into action for the right purpose and the right reason that it actually is valuable. True success is going to only come if you choose to apply all seven of the laws that we've just talked about, all seven of these principles. So I hope we all choose success.